Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey everybody, just a quick announcement before we get on to today's show. Timothy and I have been invited to do a live podcast at the second annual Film Paideia brought to you by the Darkroom Lab, and we are so excited. Just for the weekend in general, there's going to be so many amazing speakers there. Trev Lee, Matt Day, Mike Padua, Grant Britton, the list goes on. And we cannot wait to just spend the weekend with the film photography community, hanging out, nerding out, and having a great time. So we hope we can see you there. So because of that, Timothy will be on the West Coast. So we're going to hold our second Analog Talk meetup. It's going to be Thursday evening, February 28th. More details to come on that, but we hope everybody gets a chance to come hang out with us. We're super excited. Just going to be a great weekend all together, and we can't wait to see everybody. All right, guys, on to the show.
Hey, guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And today on our show, our guest is Brooke Schultz. Hey, Brooke.
Hi, Brooke.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us. We're super excited to chat with you. Before we get into all the things, can you give our listeners kind of a background in yourself and how you got started in photography?
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. I am pumped. You guys,
Yay! Yeah, it's
just so fun to talk to you. So yeah, so I got started in photography when I was in high school, It was actually because a family friend heard me saying that I wished I could color for a living. Like, I was doing coloring hipster books. Like, I was, I just love to color. And so she was like, you can do Photoshop for me. And so she taught me how to edit, and she was patient with all of my really great, you know, selective color, like all the classic rookie mistakes and everything. I was into it. So after I was editing for her for a while, she started taking me on shoots, and I was kind of like, maybe I could do this. But then, I was just interested in photography at that point, but I wasn't really like shooting other than just my point and shoot and taking pictures of my friends and like over editing them to unrecognizable states.
Been there.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like a rite of passage, right?
I think exactly. So. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But so after high school, I was still into photography in college and just kind of a fan. And I discovered Jonathan Canlis's work, and he was kind of the first photographer whose work I just felt really transported by, like that I could just look at these images and have all of these feelings and feel like I knew the subject. And that to me was just magical, like to be able to have that kind of experience just looking at an image. So I was really addicted after that. But I still didn't make the jump into actually shooting until my coworker was getting married, and she just wanted to have the cheapest wedding possible. So I was showing her all these photographers that I was like, you should hire this person, you should hire that person, look at all these amazing images. And she's like, nah, how about you just do it? And I was young and naive, and so I said yes, and I did everything wrong, you know, just pop-up flash, like Nikon D70, you guys. Yeah. That's a 7-0. Wow. No more zeros after that. The D70 with the kit lens. Like, oh man, it was it was really high quality. So, and like halfway through editing the images, I just gave up because I didn't know how to actually edit like reception images.
Oh, yeah.
When I had done editing for the other photographer, she would mostly just send me like her family stuff. And she actually like knew what she was doing. So she wasn't like having big editing nightmares like having with that wedding. And so I just gave up and just gave the images to her, like, half edited. And yeah. So then after that, I was just charging, you know, $20 a session. Like, I'm just a stereotype, a walking stereotype of all the classic mistakes. But yeah. So, and then it kind of snowballed from there that I actually got serious about wedding photography and became a wedding photographer and was still a big fan of John Canlis's work and kind of got familiar with other film photographers and started realizing, okay, all the photographers' work I like is film. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go ahead and try it out and start shooting film. And so I got myself a Canonette. And
yes.
Curse that camera. I just had no idea what I was doing.
Oh,
so
the
concept of rangefinder, right. I just could not. And of course, I wanted to shoot everything at 1.4 mm-hmm. or 1.7, whatever that lens was. So nothing was in focus. I was developing at Walgreens. It was just, was a hot mess. So I was like, I'm bad at film. I have no idea how to shoot film. So that was like a year. And then, I randomly, this is the really long version. I can speed it up.
No, it's all good.
So I randomly bid on a Mamiya 645 AF on eBay. And I won. And I was like, wait, I guess I'm buying it. Okay.
That's the thing about eBay. That's how mess. You're just like, well, it's meant to be then. I won the auction.
Yeah, you just like never assume that you're going to win. And then when you do, you're like, what?
Yeah.
So that was when it really started for me. And when I started getting film back and realizing I only liked the film frames. And so now, and then progressively, I was shooting weddings on film, but hybrid. And then I got into family photography and I knew that I wanted to shoot families in their homes. And so after I got my feet wet with that, then I just fell head over heels for that and decided to put weddings on the shelf and focus only on family photography and specifically film family photography. So that's where I'm at now.
Man, I think you did the right thing because your work is beautiful. It's outstanding.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. I agree.
Yeah, well, and it's funny that you say that because like at the time I was shooting a couple families here and there, but like nobody was saying, hey, do you want to shoot candid images of families in their homes on film? Like everybody know? So I don't know. It just goes to show that nobody's going to ask you to do the thing that you want to do. And you got to be the one
that
initiates it.
Man, I love, again, I think we say this every show, like when you get to hear the other person's story of how mm-hmm. they kind of like, you know, fell into this whole thing. And there's so many similarities in our stories combined. Like I remember my first real film camera, the Jump, was a Canonette Q19. It was the 1.9 version. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea how to use it. So, and I didn't realize
camera.
You needed a battery and like all this stuff. So I would basically just point and shoot. I didn't understand the rangefinder patch. It was just awful. Yeah. It was a mess. And like just hearing you say that brought me back right to the beginning.
Yeah. Some special times with the camera.
Oh, yeah. I think I have like one good photo from all the rolls
no.
I put through.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. No, I have one good photo and it's still framed because it's like I bled and sweat for that frame.
Like, trophy.
Yeah. Man, so good.
So I have a question about your style. This is just, I'm thinking as you're saying, you know, you come into people's homes and you capture them in their element. How is that? Do you like go to their house first and kind of scope it out? Because you never really know what you're walking into. That's like anytime, this is just from my on-set photography. Every time I walk in and they're like, this is where you're going to shoot. I'm like, you guys, for real? there's no space or this and that? Or do you like, I guess, just walk us through that process?
Yeah, such a good question, because it's totally a crapshoot. But when I was first starting out shooting families in their homes, then I was shooting digital, and so I had a lot more leeway. And then once I transitioned to film, I realized, okay, I need kind of this, I need a few things. Mm-hmm. But then as I shot more, then I realized I don't really need that much. If people have one good size window and like a plain wall, I'm good to go. You can kind of make it. Worst case scenario, I take them outside and I shoot on their porch, and I shoot through windows a lot. Shooting through windows is like just a great way to get yourself some more exposure if you're stuck at, you know, 1/30th of a second in a dark house. So, I mean, I have little tricks that I have developed over time, so that now I feel confident just walking into any house and knowing I can make it work however it's presented. But I think that it's a combination of that and the classic showing what you want to shoot and showing what you want to attract, that I attract clients who have like enough light and enough space in their homes to be able to be photographed there, that they're not like, oh, I live in a dungeon, let's come shoot in a dungeon. You know,
so. Come over to mom's basement.
Exactly.
Man, I wanted to ask about you kind of taking the jump from, you know, shooting hybrid or digitally, having the safe backup to film. Like, was it tough for you to kind of wean off of the digital thing, or was it kind of just like all in with film, where you kind of just knew it was going to work, kind of thing?
Oh, I'm just laughing at everything, because everything that is my story is just me being way more confident than I should have been. Like, yeah, I can totally shoot your wedding, no problem. And like, yeah, I can shoot families on film in their homes, no problem. Like, I just leap before I look with things that I'm really passionate about, and that's photography for sure. So the thing was that I had done probably like 5 mini shoots of families on digital, and it just wasn't looking great, and I just wasn't loving it. And then I discovered film and went to a workshop with Yann Palmer, if you know her.
Yeah.
And so she shoots families on film in their homes, and I was like, all right, that's it. I'm doing it. And so I set up a shoot, just a portfolio building kind of free thing with an acquaintance, and I walked into her house, and it was dream sauce, you guys. It was light. It was white walls. It was just like the most gorgeous possible, like, lucky scenario. So here I am, like, my first all film shoot, and I didn't even know how amazing I had it, like what beautiful lottery ticket I had blessedly drawn. Like, I had no idea. And so I shot the session, got the film back, and was like, oh, this is amazing, I'm in. And so then, of course, my next shoot was not that, and so I had lots of dark, muddy, terrible images. And so it was just trial and error after that. But like, just that one shoot of the possibility and just seeing what could be was enough to get me hooked.
Man, because I feel like people struggle with that. And like, Chris, I know you kind of always, you know, you wouldn't go shoot a wedding or an engagement shoot just on film. Like, I know you would take your...
I shot one engagement session all on film.
Nice. Good. And I like hearing that.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it's funny, because it's like, you're nervous, but you're like, why though? I know they're coming out. Like, I don't. And I mean, it's one of my favorite sessions. Went to a pumpkin patch, and like, you know, all the colors are incredible. And I shot them on, that was on my Elan 7NE. So I had, on my Canon glass. I remember those images like looked 3D to me, and I was like, yep, this is what I'm meant to be doing. But yeah, some people just, it's not even always, you know, me. It's like for people want to see the images, you know? So sometimes feel like, but that engagement session is still one of my favorites. So it can be done.
Man, I just always, when I was still doing kind of paid work stuff, I would always, right up until the last 10 minutes of packing for the gig, I would have a freak out meltdown and then have to take my digital camera with me. And I'd be so bummed, because I'd use it the whole time and take a half a roll of film. And of course, the film shots were always the best ones. So it's just, I don't know, man. I love hearing Brooke talk about this and being so confident in it because
so stupid.
You know, like I would love to get kind of back into doing stuff like that. Like I feel like I'm ready. I feel like I've kind of matured to the level where, you know, it's not all about me kind of thing. Like I got real stubborn and one-sided with my photography the last couple of years, and I kind of want to branch out again and do some stuff. So this is what I needed.
Good. Yeah. Well, the thing too is that with jumping both feet into family photography, I had nothing to lose because with my wedding work, I still shot hybrid up until the very end of when I shot weddings. And I think that it was what you're saying about kind of that pressure that you put on yourself and mm-hmm. you have this paying client and just all the things that you need to consider. And I think that it's easy to be like, oh yeah, we should just all shoot film all the time. But like, of course there's mm-hmm. reasons why we don't, you know, and mm-hmm. they're valid reasons. So like, I think it was easier for me to jump kind of horizontally into families knowing, okay, this is just something totally new and I don't have anything at stake here.
Plus, I guess you could always reschedule a family shoot, like a wedding. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, can't do that again.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine pulling off an entire wedding on film. You know, like
people
that
do it.
Seems
crazy.
I know. But
if Wendy's listening, she's going to be like, I do it.
Yeah.
I know. Wendy's the best. She's like, she it's just film. It's just a couple bucks. Fail. I'm like, yes, go. Go, Wendy, go.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's just funny because every time I think of Wendy, I think of my mom because, of course, my mom listens to every one of these episodes. And she's just like, I really like Wendy. Yeah. It's like, who doesn't, man?
Yeah,
she is amazing.
So funny. So Brooke, I saw on your Instagram you're doing a little seminar workshop. What are you calling it?
Yeah, I call it the retreat.
Yes,
because
ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, because it's not. I used to do it just a 1 day workshop, and then I put everything that was in the 1 day workshop into an online course that's now included with the retreat. So the retreat is like just time to gel and all of that. So. Sorry, we can back up. But the workshop was basically shooting families and getting those, I call them love-soaked images. And so with the workshop, then I was going through all my tips and tricks, everything that I know about shooting families, and I knew it was just way too much for 1 day.
Sure.
But yeah, so now all of that is in the online course, and everyone who comes to the retreat has access to the course. They can go through the course, and they do go through the course before they come to the retreat. And
oh,
so then
oh,
the retreat
cool.
is
yeah.
really just about like applying all of that, because I was seeing that there was such a gap in between knowing something intellectually and being able to apply it in real time at a shoot when you're trying to think of like
right.
85 different things at once. And so I would kind of be like, well, what with people who had taken the course, like, why aren't you doing this thing? Why aren't you playing this game? Or why aren't you reacting this way? And they'd be like, oh, like it's just the application. There's such a gap. And I think it's hard when you're a self-taught photographer, you're used to working alone and you're trying to improve your work alone all the time.
Right.
And having that setting of a workshop or a retreat, whether it's mine or anybody else's, I think is so great for all photographers to experience and just to have that guide that is there to help you and to help you see the forest through the trees. I mean,
right.
athletes have coaches. I think photographers should have coaches too.
That's a great analogy. It's true.
I'm alone all the time with my photography, and I relish in the moments when, you know, somebody comes to visit or I go somewhere to shoot with somebody. Like there's just like a communion with community mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. unstoppable when you're with somebody, and I just feel like you learn so much in a little bit when you're with mm-hmm. somebody and learn so little over a long time when you're by yourself, you know, because you're just constantly doing
yeah.
the same thing when you're alone. So I'm into it.
So when is your retreat happening? It's soon, right?
Yeah. So it's April 24th to 27th. It's here in Utah. And as we're speaking, there's a couple spots still left. But I look forward to it all year. I only do one every year because I love to just like go all out. And
all in, yeah.
I call it like fun-spiration. combined with action because
I love that.
I love to have like that. I think that inspiration and that fun is such a key ingredient that lots of photographers don't put enough weight on. And that's why we get burnout, because you're not having fun and you're not inspired anymore.
The word inspired, I was like, that's something for me that like a retreat like this would just like reset me, you know, like get me back fired up again. So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's a huge goal of it. But the other thing is like, how many times have you been to a conference or a retreat or a workshop and you felt that inspiration, but then you got home and nothing really changed?
Right.
So I spend time with everybody who's there doing a really detailed action plan and getting everybody all set up so that they know, okay, here's my next steps, and to make sure that it actually makes an impact and a difference when they get back to work at home versus just like, oh yeah, that was nice. And then I kind of went back to my same old.
I want to go.
I was going to say the same thing.
Come on guys, two spots left. One, two, you're in.
Yeah, you heard it, listeners. Anybody wants to go to Brooke's retreat, there's two spots left. So, I also checked out your podcast, Brooke.
Oh, thanks.
Talk to us about that. I know it's like a kind of you in the audience type thing. Is that, do you ever, it's like more of a creative, like kind of inspirational podcast, not so much photography. Am I right on that?
Yeah. So I definitely use photography a lot as the examples, but it is about creativity and living a wildly creative life. I'm just like on a mission to make the world a more creative place. I discovered at some point in my life that not everybody is like me in the sense of like, they feel afraid to leap before they look and like they actually like plan things out, and I'm just like, yeah, all the things. So I just think that we would all be better served if we were more creative and created more on purpose. And I just talked to lots of people, photographers and regular people, who just aren't creating something that they want to create in their life. And I just think that's one of the biggest tragedies, because our ability to be creative as humans is such a gift. And I mean, like, to bring it back around to photography, like I was talking about with John Canlis's work, like anybody's work that you appreciate and love as just a viewer and an experiencer of that work, like, how sad would you be if that person just decided not to? And like, where would we be if we didn't have, you know, the masters of photography, the Richard Avedons, the everybody else, you know, like, and so why not you? Why aren't you? Not to say that everybody should act like they're a master and be super overconfident or arrogant at all, but just to say that we all have something to offer, and that the podcast is really about taking those impulses that we have and bringing them into the world.
I freaking love that.
I love it too, because, you know, even the littlest thing, like putting, I know we talk about it all the time on here, but like making a zine or a book or something like that, or even giving a print away or something like that. Like it, when you give, I don't know, it helps you, I feel like, more than the person that you're giving said object to. Like, just when I put together my latest little zine about going home and stuff like that, it was so therapeutic to just work on that, you know, from taking the photos to making the book to da da da, you know, like it was just like a, I don't know, it felt really good, you know, and it just flowed and it was great. And, you know, now that I'm kind of just in that winter stale right now, where it's like cold and crappy outside, I can tell the difference, you know, like I can feel, because I haven't been being as creative as I should be. And like, it's true, you should definitely be throwing glitter and confetti everywhere and just going crazy and making things, because there's, you know, even if you sit down and do like a little origami paper art thing, you know, it is so fulfilling making something out of nothing. Like it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned that like it benefits you more than anybody else, because we like to think that our creative impulses are for other people sometimes. But I love the way Elizabeth Gilbert talks about it. And she talks about I'm going to butcher this quote, but like she says, you can always tell people who are living for others by the expressions on the faces of the others.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And just like, wow. That it's like anything that we do, just be honest about it. It's for yourself. Mm. And that's actually great news. And it's actually a great service to the world around you and to other people around you, because that other cheesy quote about the world needs people who have come alive, I mean, that's, nobody else is going to do it for you. You have to do the work of making yourself come alive, whatever that is, and give yourself permission for that to change too, by the way. Like, that inspiration, that creative impulse, that can be any number of things at any point. But to do that for yourself, I just think is one of the greatest gifts that you can give to yourself first, but then also to everybody in your life and to everybody in the world.
Amen. I can't stop smiling. I don't know about you guys.
I got the warm and fuzzies.
I feel so good right now. I feel like I just had like a... like a session with the doc or something. I don't know what it
is. Yes, gotta pump you up.
it's just nuts, because I'm such like a seasonal depression kind of person. And, you know, I moved more south. I'm East Coast, born and raised, you know, that you're always just like a grumpy and mad because it's cold. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to move south. So I moved south. And, you know, I thought being in the south would be better because it's warmer. And it still gets cold here. So I get so grumpy. And it's funny because it like that kind of stuff really takes a toll on your creative. I was just talking about it to my mom today about, you know, just it's cold and it's winter. And, you know, sometimes I can find the good in that. But lately I've just been like, I'm so ready for spring and new. But you don't need spring and new to be to do a refresh, you know what I mean? You can, it's kind of like New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. Everybody's just like, okay, well, I'm going to start eating better on New Year's. And it's like, well, why don't you just start now? Like, why don't you just start doing what you're, you know, kind of like what you were saying about just everything we were just talking about, kind of like why, like, hold the creative spark and stuff inside, just kind of like find it and let it out.
Yeah. For sure.
We're like in the midst of an ice storm right now. And I was like, great. Oh my this gosh, is exactly what I need.
Ice storm. No wonder you're depressed, man.
I know. Yeah, I know. Right? And it came out of nowhere. You know, it was almost 60 degrees today. It was almost 60. Oh. And everybody's like cruising around in t-shirts because you know how that like Indian summer affects people. Everybody's just like, yay, shorts and flip-flops. And it's 40 out. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, it's just so weird, like how the weather changed so dramatically so quick.
You should go take photos in the ice storm tomorrow. That'd be cool.
I'm going to get up early. I'm going to get up early and go. Because Tuesdays are my, I always dedicate, I don't know what it is. There's just something about Tuesdays where it's like, I know my mornings or afternoons or early evenings are always free because I only ever work at night on Tuesdays if I work. And I always go out and shoot from like 3:30 till 6 or 7 or something. And I'm excited to go do that tomorrow because it's been a while since I've had my Tuesday.
It's going to be cool. Nice.
See, you've got a date with creativity.
See? I know.
You're doing the thing.
It's like, I like that you have the time frame too. It's like, this is the day I'm going to go shoot, even when I don't feel like it. We've talked about that in the show too, like getting out of ruts. Sometimes you just have to like, just get out.
I mean, sometimes I don't even go shoot, you know, I always lug, you know, 15 cameras with me. And that's like something I'm trying to really kind of cut back on too. Is really, I bought a smaller book bag with a smaller camera bag insert, and I'm gonna like really cut it down to what I need to shoot. I just always like options. I don't know about you guys. I like having four cameras with me at all times. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I know why, because the mood might strike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Black and white or color. Or
can't commit.
Medium format, 35. Speaking of cameras, Brooke, what do you typically shoot with?
Well, my main workhorse is the Pentax 645.
That's what I have.
I love that camera.
I just got mine fixed too. Yeah? It was out of commission one time after another time, and now I think she's back for good. So, I'm excited.
Yeah, I do love that camera. And so that's probably what like 80% of my work is shot on. And then the other 20% is the Nikon F100.
Nice.
Oh, I also camera. Really like that camera. Yeah. And I mostly keep the Sigma Art 1.4 on that camera.
Nice. What a combo.
Yeah. I like the contrast of those two. Picking between them is, I mean, I'd probably choose the Pentax, but like having that little extra splash of like the unexpected of the Nikon F100 and how you see so much differently when you're shooting that horizontal 35 versus like a 6.45.
I think they go well together though. Like 6.45 and 35 go together really well because their frames kind of almost look alike.
Yeah.
When you start mixing like a 6.7 camera, like a like my Mamiya RB6.7 or something like that, or the Pentax 6.7, it's a more like rectangled, squarish looking, not so square, but you know, it's not 6x6, but I like that. I miss that. I don't have a 6.45 camera at the moment, and it kind of bothers me because I. Because why don't I have one?
You need some options. You need more options, Tim.
Oh, man. See, the way I used to have my office set up for this, you could see all my cameras. And I was just like, I need to hide my addiction of camera collecting.
Mine are right here. So I'm not trying to hide any of mine.
All I need is another camera.
It's all we all need.
I know.
Do you typically shoot like black and white in the Pentax or in the Nikon versus color in the Pentax, or do you switch it up, or what's your workflow when you go on set? Well, yeah, on a shoot.
Yeah, so I don't, I hardly ever shoot black and white. I just, because I'm shooting in home, there's always enough frames that I just want to desaturate. I know that you guys are probably cringing, you black and white lovers, and looking at you, but I just, I haven't fallen in love with it yet, and I am not very exact with my metering, and so I shoot Portra 400, and that's, you know, super forgiving, so I can be pretty overexposed, and it's not going to make a big difference, and I can be a little underexposed, and it's going to be okay, so I don't shoot a lot of black and white. I shoot Portra 400 in both cameras for the most part. But like with the 35, then I'll do some double exposures. I'll do some light leaks. I'll just kind of play around with it. Whereas the Pentax, I just, you know, it's the workhorse. It's all the classic everything, kind of like the meat of the work.
Yeah, I was wondering how you were getting like all those crazy pinks and stuff like that. So do you do any of the crazy film souping stuff like Wendy at all? Or
no, I just recently was like, maybe I want to try that. You know, winter brings on that need to bring in new stuff and to experiment and try something new. So I've been doing more double exposures, mostly inspired by Wendy, to be honest. And that's kind of scratching the itch for now. But I could see myself doing some film soup in the future.
I just love that it's called film souping. Like that's so cool.
Yeah,
you can get really crazy with that.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
I don't like the idea of ruined frames though. That kind of makes me a little sad because I used to shoot a family session on 5 rolls of medium format and like 1 roll of 35. Now I'm about double that, but like the idea of having potentially half my frames ruined on like the one roll of 35 that I do shoot, I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah, but you never, I mean, it's not ruining it. It could make them even cooler.
I know, right? But they could just turn out, you know, black or all one color. Yeah,
the unpredictable.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
We'll be right back with a question for Brooke right after this message from our sponsor.
All right, guys, today's show is brought to you by us. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk for special content only for Patreons. Again, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk.
All right, everybody, this is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this question comes from Chris Visser. Hey, Chris, thanks for the question.
Hey, Chris.
He asked this to you, Brooke. He says, how do you make an instant connection with a stranger, particularly when that stranger is a hyperactive child who won't sit still and look at you? Good one, right?
Yeah, so good. So good. So the biggest thing that I do to connect with kids is that I get down on their level physically. And that seems so simple and obvious, but we hardly ever do it in real life as adults. So getting down on their level, and I have the advantage of being in their home. So I ask them to show me their room, and that builds rapport immediately, because all kids are excited. If they can't sit still and look at me, they're excited to show me their stuff and their toys and all their goods. So we build immediate connection that way. And if I need some more connection juice after that, after I've done those two things and it's just not going well, particularly with like 7-8-year-old boys.
Yep.
They're like just starting to figure out like maybe this chick isn't cool.
Yeah.
Then I love to do like a just anything that gets them in power. So I have them tell their moms and dads what to do, or have them give me like a super hard high five, depending on the age, and to see how hard they can slap my hand. That's always a crowd pleaser. So, yeah, I mean, the overarching principle, I would say, is just to help them feel like they're in control and that they have the power and that you're not just going to come in there and be one more adult telling them what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I used to work in a family portrait studio. I like almost forgot about this part of my career, but it was 95% kids photography and maybe the other 5% was like family portraits. Yeah. But I was just thinking back to like all the ridiculous like peekaboo and like jumping up and down and like doing all the crazy things. I think the advantage for you is probably like you said, being in their space, because it's you know, especially when they're walking into a strange building and they're in like in all these people around, and then they kind of get like, you know, it takes a lot to get them out of that shell of being nervous and shy. Because they're just like, where are we kind of thing. And then the fact we only have 45 minutes for the session. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, we get good stuff like at the last 5 minutes. I'm like, wait, I need more time.
Yeah. That sounds like nightmare in a box, man.
Yeah. It was, it was rough.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound rough at all.
But it got me, you know, that was kind of like one of those do or die situations. Mm-hmm. Like that was my second photo job right after photography school. And I remember being like, this is, you know, I was shooting just my friends at this point still. And that was like, you know, this is photographing strangers. So here we go. And there was like not a lot of, I kind of had to jump into it. There was no, I got the job and there was like, that's it. Now you have to go do it. And we had like maybe a week of training, and then they're like, go ahead. And I was like, okay, cool. That's it. Like I shot my first wedding that way too. A friend was like, do you want to shoot a second shoot for this photographer guy? It's $500 or whatever. And I was like, yes. And then I remember sitting in my car being like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. 1, 2, 3, here we go. Just out, you know, just jumped right into it. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you're living like the total principles of success, because I love Tina Fey talks about success, and that one of her biggest mantras is say yes and you'll figure it out later.
It's so true, man. It's like,
that's like exactly what you're doing. Say yes, you'll figure it out later.
Even like with the show, I was like, I don't know, I want to do a podcast, I'm scared, but then here we are 2 years later, so gotta do it.
Yeah, wild.
Anyway, great question, Chris, thanks for sending that in. All right, Brooke, now here's the real tough one. What's your desert island camera? Basically, like, if you had to pick one camera for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Okay. Well, all right. Why do you guys keep this question around? I mean, it just, like, makes people angry,
right?
No, I'm totally kidding.
I get, like, massive anxiety every time we do this part.
I know. Again, palms are sweaty.
My hands are sweating.
We got sweaty palms all around over here. I'd probably say the Pentax 645, but, like, if it was truly a desert island situation and I don't need to like pay for my food or like humanity, I'd probably take the contacts. And I might want to like barf just saying that, but it's just such a gorgeous camera.
Wait, Contax 645?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, girl. I had that and sold it like an idiot. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm a little bit morally opposed to it at the moment just because it's so popular. Like I kind of have, I remember probably 4 years ago seeing one on eBay for $1,700. I cannot believe I didn't snatch that baby up.
Wow.
But anyway, so like I just have an aversion to anything that's popular, like kind of to a fault. So like if I'm on a desert island and there's nobody else around, then I'm taking the Contax.
Yes. Second part of the question, is there any cameras that you're a white whale camera right now? Anything you're lusting after that you haven't picked up yet?
Ooh, yeah. I'm deciding between a Diana and a Holga.
Ooh.
I want to just add some more. I just need some more fun. Like, I've kind of mastered what I'm doing at the moment. So it's time to bring in something new. So, Yeah, I'm not sure which one of those I'm going to go for, but I'm thinking the Holga at this point.
Yeah, just speaking from experience, Holga is... and everyone's different, too, as I'm sure they are with the Diana. And I just, like, they're so weird, you know? Like, some of the one that I've been shooting with the most, the Holga that I've used the most out of the two that I have... The dull spot is in the middle, like the soft part of the lens is the dead center, which is, it makes for
kind
like
of a problem.
Really interesting photos, though. Yeah, like it's really hard to shoot.
Yeah.
But I kind of enjoy that. Like, every shot's a crap shot. Yeah. You know, I might as well be shooting with the lens cap on because you don't even know what you're going to get. Like, but I kind of like that about that camera.
Yeah, because I remember when I first started shooting film, it was, like, so thrilling to get the film back and to see, like, oh, how did I do? And, like, the idea of waiting to see the images and, like, mm-hmm. all of that was so new and so fun. And now, like, I'm at the point where... I know what I'm going to get back, mm-hmm. you know, and like, that's a good yeah. thing. That's really good. But like, I think all of us photographers need to keep that element of surprise in our process and in our work in some way or another, like just to keep it fun and interesting.
Man, I
agree.
Where
we got to start opening the back of our cameras and mm-hmm. and soup and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever shoot any instant stuff? Like, especially with, like, the kids and stuff? Do you ever do any, like, Instax or Polaroid or anything like that?
Yeah, I do have my own kids, but just, like, a little Instax.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing fancy there, but they do really like that. I have wanted to get into Polaroids and do more of the instant stuff. I just... would want to like get a scanner and mm-hmm. need to scan it yeah. and like that part of adding that much into my process is a little beyond me at this mm-hmm. point, like just from what I have on my plate. But yeah, that would be really fun,
man. I know anytime I get to take a shot of like a coworker's, you know, one of my coworker's daughters or sons or something like that, they just like, it blows their mind every time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's the best part.
I mean, it still blows my mind every time. Like, totally. I'm like a little kid every time I take a Polaroid. Oh, yeah. I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's, yeah, no, best party trick.
It is. It really is.
Brooke, I also want to ask you about your, do you shoot personal work a lot? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so my kids right now are 5, 4, and 2. So, yeah, they're really little. And they're not very interested in having their photo taken. my 5-year-old is
get
like,
get out of here, mom.
She's like just barely starting to like maybe think about it a little bit and be okay with it. Like, we did some double exposures together and she was excited about that, but that's as far as it's gone. Otherwise I'm bribing with fruit snacks, but I do, they like pushing the button for the self timer.
Oh.
So I've done some self-portrait stuff with them, and that's kind of their favorite thing. So I always have a roll of film in my camera for them, and I just kind of go through seasons where I'm shooting a lot more of it or I'm shooting a little less, but it's on my mind every day. Like, every day I see the light and every day I want to take pictures of them, but I would much rather preserve their goodwill towards the camera mm-hmm. in general
yeah.
than like force them and have them not love it. So
you should do a photo series on the self-portraits.
Yeah, I've kind of just done some blog posts of like my personal work of our family in general, but yeah, I want to do more of the self-portraits, and that is, yeah, something I've already been working on this year, doing some more of those. So it's really exciting, but it's also, who likes self-portraits? Like,
that's the beauty of self-portraits.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Do you think you'll put them in like a book or something, or a zine, or are you just kind of going to keep it for the blog, or?
Yeah, so I have printed just a bunch of 4x6s of our family and my work of our family. And there was a while where I had them all like fancily taped up on the wall. it was really classy. So as they've fallen down, then it's fun to just like have them. But I would like to do more books and more albums. And I want to just, my problem is that I let perfect be the enemy of good and done too many times. So I need to just, you know, make it happen and just do the books But it does feel a little like self-indulgent and narcissistic to me to do a book of my own self-portraits and like have that in my house. But I trust the process and I think it would be good if I did that. So I need to let it gel in my mind a little bit more.
I love like Vivian Mayer, I have a book of all her self-portraits. So now like anytime I go out and there's like a mirror, I try to do like my little Vivian Mayer.
Yeah, no, I've been digging what you've been showing. So yeah.
Do you do albums for your sessions? Do you offer that for your clients? Like, do they get a book?
I haven't up to this point, and I've offered it, but I'll be honest, like, people haven't taken me up on it. And that's not to say like that it's not valuable to them, but that a lot of my clients are other photographers. So they're buying files and like doing their own printing. At least I'm hoping that they're doing their own printing.
Yeah, it's the last couple weddings I shot, they just wanted the images. Nobody really wanted albums, which is sad.
I mean, we could talk about this all night, but like, I mean, I think we're at an interesting place with photos and images and how we assign meaning to them and how much they mean to us. I know that this client wouldn't mind if I share this, but I was just in LA over New Year's and I had photographed this family and she was pregnant with her second baby at the time. And I'd photographed them in September when she was pregnant. And then I went back over New Year's. And so she has this newborn. And I was like, hey, you know, let's do a session. And she was like, I don't know. Like, we just almost didn't do the session. Mm. We did the session. And her baby died really unexpectedly at 6 weeks old. So I feel like this could turn into like a really trite kind of stereotypical story of like photos matter so much. But like when you have that experience and when it's so close to home, she is a photographer as well. And like she almost didn't do the session, right? You know, like,
yeah,
it just shows us like what truly matters. And obviously the love that we feel inside a family and our experiences and our memories are much more than the images that we have to prove that they were there. Mm-hmm. But what we have tangibly and what we end up with to hold and to remember and to help us feel those feelings again, I just think can't be overstated. And I mean, amidst that heartbreak and that grief and that like gut ripping loss, mm-hmm. they at least have the images that show not only just like a portrayal of their faces, but I also hope what it felt like to have him there and what it felt like to be the parent of a newborn, not knowing that he was going to die 2 weeks later. You know, like she looks tired in some of the images and like they're, you know, they're looking at each other and like supportive and loving of each other. And like they were supportive and loving of each other when he was here. And I know that that's what they're doing for each other now. You know, like I'm super fascinated by those relationships, especially of the parents. And I think that's one thing, like when this is a little bit of a tangent, but when people talk about like family photography, they mostly talk about it in relation to the kids. But I see families mostly in relation to parents because that's how it always starts, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just endlessly fascinated by those romantic relationships and how people keep that and how that evolves and changes and grows over time and how it changes as you add kids and get kind of that craziness and also the heartbreak mm-hmm. into the mix. Not only just the heartbreak of potentially losing a child, but just the heartbreak that it is to love that deeply and to love that like unconditionally. That's what I think is just the heart of all of it.
Beautiful. I think, you know, photos, I mean, we've all felt loss, you know, I've lost family. And I think once they're healed, they're going to be so grateful for those photographs that those photos won't be sad. They'll be like a happy memory. So I think that's really wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so.
Life is so crazy. My goodness.
Well.
Yeah, this is the therapy session I never.
Yes.
Man. But how you were talking about photography and society, I don't know if I was watching like a film where it was like set in the 90s or the 80s or something, and they must have like a character with the camera, you know? And I was just thinking how like nobody has like goes to a birthday party anymore and like has a camera or has like a video camera. Remember like the big video cameras we used to like parents have on the shoulder when we were kids and stuff? It's all on our phone. It's all on Snapchat. I mean, we talk about that like disappearing and stuff, but I really hope down the road that like kind of snapshot mentality comes back and people just start taking in the photos and getting to hold them in their hands, you know?
Well, I think half of it is that emotional issue and half of it is just like an organizational issue, you know, because like you got photos on your phone, you got photos on your computer, like you just you're they never the really live anywhere. Yeah, they never live anywhere, and so then they just die, and I think that's you know, sad in and of itself.
Well, you're doing the good work of family portraits, so
thank you.
Yeah, man. I feel like the like smartphones, just to kind of touch on that again because I was thinking about it. I think the smartphone era, I mean, of course it's going to keep progressing and things are going to get better with phones and yada yada yada, but I feel like they've really hit their peak in like how cool a phone can be, you know? So a lot of people, even computers and stuff too, I feel like a lot of people, especially kids, like the younger generations of people that I've been, you know, running across at working at the restaurant, stuff like that. Like a lot of people are getting into shooting film or listening to vinyl you know, I've been seeing Walkmans again, kids wearing Walkmans, crazy. You know, like with like listening to cassette tapes with those big fuzzy headphones that we used to use. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's like a kind of like an analog renaissance happening where, you know, people want to hold things. And, you know, do you remember how bad a cassette tape used to sound? But like, I love that, you know what I mean? And like, I love the crackle of a record or the grain of a film photograph or, you know, like, it's just like, I don't think this stuff's ever going to die. And it is a shame that, you know, in this whole digital renaissance that we had in the, you know, from early 2000s on to now, like everything had to be crystal clear and bigger and better and faster and smarter. And yeah, we did lose probably, you know, 10 to 20 years of photographs because we don't, you know, get doubles for grandma, for Uncle Steve, and, you know, for like all these people. So like we don't have the shoeboxes full of photographs anymore. But I really think that like, I kind of feel like it's back, or at least people are kind of putting little books together, or I always try to promote, you know, picking up like a 200 4x6 photo album and just like putting your, you know, just do prints again, do 4x6s or something like that and save your photos. And because it is sad, because I think of all those photos taken in the last like 10 to 15, 20 years that I don't even know where they are. I don't know how to access them anymore. Like, especially like that crappy 2.3 megapixel Kodak camera I had, you know, I don't know how to get those pictures anymore. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like it's coming back in a way.
I think it is because my mom just got a printer for her iPhone. So she's like printing from her iPhone. And I'm like, great, make a print, stick it on the fridge.
Yeah.
Mail them to me. Yeah. Like, I love it.
Totally.
I love that there's at least those services for even like Instagram and stuff. It's like get a weekly Insta or a monthly Instagram book of your posts. I've been seeing ads. I've been seeing ads for that all the time, like scrolling through my feed and stuff. It's like, you know, make a book of your last 3 months of and get one monthly sent to you. You don't even have to think about it anymore. At least you have, especially if you're a photographer, like especially if you are like you are taking photos, you know, to take photos, not just to like, you know, go to your kid's ballerina thing and take a picture of that. But like, if you're like actually going out and shooting photos, you should be printing it and saving it and holding it and loving it.
Framing it.
Sharing it. Yeah. Just do the thing, man. Come on.
Well, and I think like at the heart of all of that is is why do we make art, period? Mm-hmm. And why do we take photos, even if we wouldn't be so presumptuous as to call them art? Like, I think it's about saying and seeing, I was here. Like, there's something so visceral about that for me, especially like photographing mothers when I'm in the throes of motherhood, like giving that gift to clients, but also like giving it to myself, whether it's through somebody else or through images of me, like whether it's an image of me or an image of another mother, I feel like it's the same thing. Like, we were here when it's that silent work that all of us do, but especially parents in our own four walls every day. And so being able to like see that tangibly, I think is so powerful. But like, we can easily get sucked into the, oh yeah, I was here because it got liked or it got commented on or shared or whatever. And I just hope that we, as we become hopefully more emotionally intelligent in regards to technology, that we are able to separate that and like to see, okay, this is the feeling that we want. We want to say, I was here and this was me and this was my life at this time. And to be able to give that to ourselves and to clients and to whoever we're giving images to in a tangible form versus like, oh, it lived on the internet for 24 hours, you know?
Yeah.
Well said. Dang, Brooke.
You guys, I'm gonna keep you in my pocket. Yes, like, stroke my ego. Good. I love this. I love it.
Can we do this once a week? Can you just
done?
So awesome. Man. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Where can everybody check out your work and stuff?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Brooke B. Schultz, and you can check out my website at brookschultzphotography.com, and I've got a little freebie for Analog Talk listeners. If you go to brookschultzphotography.com/analog, it'll give you a download of how I prepare my family clients for a family session. And you can also download the exact questionnaire that I send to families before, like all the questions that I ask them before I shoot the session with them. So, and you're free to like take that and use it as your own if you want. Anybody who's listening can grab that. So
thank you for doing it. I know I'm going to scoop that up.
Yeah,
I'm downloading that.
Get it. Yum it on up.
Thank you. Timothy, where can everybody check you out?
Guys, you can find me on Instagram at Timothy Makeups. My YouTube revival is on the way in. I have a scheduled, guys, it's scheduled to be released on Sunday. Like, it's in the queue. It's ready to go. Mm-hmm. I have two videos coming. One's just an update, kind of where I went in 2018, and then I'm doing, I'm jumping on trends. Yeah, so update video, and then I'm gonna do like an everyday carry, like EDC analog film photographer version edition video. That's, I just have to finish editing, put the cherry on top, and upload that as well. So two new videos coming, one before February and one for February, so keep a lookout for that. That's youtube.com, I think, youtube.com/TimothyMakupsDitzler. Hey, don't do that. Just go to the search bar, search Timothy.makeups, make it a whole lot easier. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Chris, where are you?
Crispy Photo on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. We have a Facebook page and a group you guys already know. Thank you, thank you, thank you for hanging out with us all the time. We're back for season 3 and we're super excited. So we thank you, and thank you to Brooke.
So
this has been an awesome episode. I'm feeling so inspired and ready to go just tear it up.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, you guys. It's been a treat.
Yay. All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye. Bye.
All right, first off, we want to thank Brooke for being on the show. It was great getting a chance to talk to you. You know, you're just like a positive light, and I'm glad we got you on the show. And guys, that's going to bring us to the Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of new stuff added to the Patreon. We kind of spiffed up our tiers a little bit for you guys. So head over there, check it out, give it a chance. For all the Patreons already, we can't thank you enough, and your support means the absolute world to us. Guys, again, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. And yeah, we have another great show coming up next week, and we'll see you then. See you guys.